Welcome to the Sat Signal, the newest Bitcoin show on the Unemployable Network. Today, we are joined for the second time by none other than Tony Yazbek. Guys, this was a sensational interview. It took a minute to get into the security stuff because what I really wanted to do was get down to the really, really, really basics of what Bitcoin is, how to secure it, how a wallet works, how to send money and receive money, and the risks involved in all of doing all of that. It just took me a minute to get Tony to get down to the simple stuff because he's so used to dealing with clients that are more advanced. When we got there, I think you guys are going to love it. And then what we did after we talked through that, we kind of pivoted to talking about a sovereign life and our personal experiences of escaping countries that we felt were choking us and basically stealing our life force. And what our actual real life experience has been of letting go of stuff and moving into a life of sovereignty, freedom, possibility, and fairness. And I think you guys are going to absolutely love it. So please stick around all the way to the end of this one because it just gets better and better and better. And I think it's actually quite life-changing for many of you if you get through it all the way. As always, drop a like, drop a comment, and most importantly, subscribe. The links to everything are below in the resources, in the comments, whatever it is below the video. Other than that, enjoy the pod, and we'll see you in the next one. Welcome to the show, Tony. This is your second appearance with us here on Unemployable. How are you doing?
Good, man. Great to see you, Adam. How's it going?
Really well. Whereabouts are you in the world today?
Well, right now I'm landing a few more days in Cyprus. And and then headed back out.
Okay, fantastic. Tony, the reason we've asked you back and you've agreed to come back is because we've just launched this new channel, which you can see it's called the Sat Signal. We've given it a name. It's all about Bitcoin.
I love it.
The more we talk about Bitcoin, the number one question, or certainly one of the top three questions we're getting over and over and over again, is how do you buy it? And how do you secure it? And so I've said to my audience, look, I happen to know a guy who's probably the number one security expert in the world, and he's coming on the pod this week. So they're very happy to hear from you. For those of you who didn't watch the first interview that we had with Tony, I'm going to put a link to it in the description. Tony's got an incredible story. He was in Lebanon when the banking crisis happened. Basically, all the ATMs stopped working. They stole everybody's money. And he was very much on a need-to-know basis. So we're not going to go back over that story, but he basically has been a full-on Bitcoiner, but he's also a Bitcoin security expert. So we're super, super privileged to have a Tony here to talk about it. And he runs a company called The Bitcoin Way, and they specialize in helping people to properly secure their Bitcoin. So, Tony, where do you want to kick this conversation off? Like, how do you normally start a discussion with people who are worried about this subject? Maybe we can take a step back and talk about the difference between real Bitcoin, fake Bitcoin, paper Bitcoin, and then the importance of self-custody, what the problem is, and then we can talk about how we actually solve it.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Adam. I mean, I guess the number one place to start is to have an open mind into accepting that we have something new in the world now. This is no longer a theory. It's no longer a myth. It's real and it's not going anywhere. And it's called Bitcoin. And Bitcoin essentially, you know, completely redefines the rules. It doesn't, you know, modify existing rules. It changes them completely and implements its own. So it requires an unlearning of, you know, old habits that, you know, have been instilled in us since a very long time, which, you know, when it comes to money, revolve around the belief that we always need a third party in order to custody our money and, you know, to manage it and what have you. All of that goes out the window, thankfully, with Bitcoin, because as has been proven over and over time again, there's massive counterparty risk when you employ, you know, third-party custodians with regards to your finances, because you very quickly realize that whenever you do engage their services, that money is no longer yours. And you are, you know, playing by rules that you can't control. And if things go bad, well, you are the casualty of these bad decisions. And those will not stop. The fiat system, you know, once you take the time to understand money, you also very quickly learn that it's a scam. You know, fiat money is a Ponzi that we've been led to believe, rather duped to believe, that had value. And so The conversation usually starts there so that you don't come into Bitcoin thinking it's a get-rich scheme, that it's something that you're going to buy and sell to make more dollars or euros, all that stuff. That's not what the end game here. Bitcoin is about freedom go up. It's not about making more dollars or euros or any other fiat currency. It's about regaining control of your time and energy and living life on your own terms, where you no longer need to ask permission from anyone. If you want to send value across borders, irrespective of the amount, you can do it. It's a 30-second process. The amount is irrelevant, whether it's 100 or 100 million, it's done. And so it's a game changer. It's a massive, massive game changer. But in order to really win in Bitcoin, you must learn how to use it properly. And that is the one thing that seems to petrify everyone, because it comes from the world of technology. And most people are not comfortable in that space, which is a valid concern. And everyone understands that if you make a mistake, well, the money is gone, which is true. This is not a joke. It's a serious concern. But this is not rocket science. Self-custody is very easy. Once it's instructed and explained to you in basic English and baby steps, you learn it very quickly. And once it clicks, it'll be as seamless as having a cup of coffee. So really the beginning stages of all this is having the right mindset. I want to protect my time and energy. I no longer want to rely on anyone else for it. I don't want to work for free anymore. You know, my wealth is mine. It's my personal responsibility. And now for the first time ever, I have the option to live this way. So that's where I would begin.
Yeah, I absolutely love this. And it's so interesting when you talk to people in places like Australia, it's all about, what do you think Bitcoin's going to go to? You know, should I get some of my stocks and buy it and allocate it? And now I can increase my portfolio return and all of this. Two nights ago, I mean, you're in Cyprus right now. I'm in Cyprus right now. Two nights ago, I was at a Bitcoin meetup in Limassol. And the discussion wasn't about what's Bitcoin going to be worth. The discussion was about, explain to me how this is a safe way to store my salary, because we don't trust the banks. We're trying to find places to put it. We traditionally, they might have put it in US dollars, but now they're seeing the amount of debt that the US is in, and they're starting to see that they're having to pay more and more and more to get people to buy their bonds. And they're going, hang on a second, these are not good signs. This reminds me of something that happened to us not so long ago in this country. What other options are there? And that's all roads lead to Bitcoin, because there is no government to rely on. There is no money printer. There is no embedded banks that are there to be middlemen that just arbitrate and control and can weaponize and tell you where you can move your money and where you can't, and you know, all of those things. So it's very interesting talking to people in other parts of the world that understand these things. And so I always love talking to you, because that experience of having all of your money taken overnight is very real. So, guys, what we're talking about here, this term self-custody, means that all of a sudden you are going to be playing the role of the bank in your own life. You know, you're going to be taking custody of it. It's a huge responsibility. So where do we start, Tony? Like, what are the core principles of understanding? Because I think maybe how when you buy Bitcoin, what are you actually buying, so that people understand that? So what are we actually storing first? And then why shouldn't we just go onto a Bitcoin exchange and then just, you know, we put the fiat currency in, it says we have $100,000 of credit, and then we go and buy Bitcoin. Then all of a sudden in our Bitcoin wallet on this exchange, it says we have $100,000 of Bitcoin. And most people in the traditional finance world, what we call TradFi, if you buy stocks, you're used to getting your money going to your stock trading account. You're seeing a credit of the Tesla shares that you own, and then you leave it. You don't move the Tesla shares anywhere. Why is it different with Bitcoin? Why should we make sure that we move that ledger from the exchange and into our own custody? And then we'll talk about the options about where to move it. But why is it firstly important to move it off the exchange?
Sure. The thing is, with Bitcoin, it's the first time in history where you can actually own your money. And Bitcoin is the only asset, you know, in the existence of the universe that has given us that optionality. Prior to that, any concoction of the TradFi world was based on that Ponzi, you know, that printed paper, that worthless paper that only seemed to have value because governments told us that it did. But it doesn't. And so Bitcoin redefines these rules. So when people say I'm buying Bitcoin, you know, like it makes me smile because you're not, I mean, technically, yes, you are buying it. But what you're really doing is you're upgrading from, you know, that worthless money into actual sound money. But if you leave it on an exchange, it's not yours. There's really no difference at that point from, you know, you leaving money in a bank. It's not yours. If the bank decides they don't like you or they want to change the rules overnight, then too bad for you. If that, you know, if that doesn't work in your advantage, well, bad luck. Bitcoin is the same thing. If you buy it and leave it on an exchange, you're susceptible to that same counterparty risk. So you need to buy it and withdraw it. And once it's in your control, that's when you know with 100% certainty that you actually own it. It's not an IOU. Like you don't know what the exchange or that third party custodian is doing. Like they may tell you, you know, you have this amount on our platform, but do you really know that? Can you validate it? You can't. Unless they're doing proof of reserves, which most of them don't. So you have to take them at their word. And there's no such thing as I can trust them. This is an excruciatingly painful lesson that I learned back in Lebanon. I was dealing with the highest caliber financial institutions that you will ever know. 5-star, all Harvard, Oxford graduates, bank managers. All the prestige you can ever imagine. All of this was worth rubbish because it all amounted to a big fat zero. And that lesson applies globally. There's no such thing, oh, I know him, he's a good guy. Oh, I know her, she's a good person. Oh, I know this platform, I can trust it. That is an illusion. Because as long as that individual or that platform is tied to the fiat legacy system, they are bound by their corrupt rules, which were created to steal. So sooner or later, when things get bad enough, those ramifications are going to come and affect you. And if you're still lingering on these platforms, you will become a casualty of that demise. And you don't want to be doing this. So
yeah,
self-custody, yeah, I mean, self-custody eliminates all this risk. It's not something to fear. It's actually something to really get excited over. That's something that I try to push out as much as possible because people are like, oh, but I suck on a computer. I've never used it. I don't know what to do. That's okay. You know, you don't have to be a tech genius to learn self-custody. You just have to be comfortable on a machine, just following clear and concise instructions. And if you engage like experts, like how we do it, then we will walk you through it, spoon feed you the baby steps in order to, you know, remove that big scary monster and translate it into plain English. And by the end of it, you'll be like, well, that wasn't so bad. And once you get the hang of it, you're home free.
Forever. And I really just want to linger on this point of what Tony said there for a minute about the illusion and the marketing and the deception and the flaw in human beings. So, for example, Tony trusted his money to a bank. That word alone carries with it a huge amount of gravitas. When we're dealing with a bank, there's a huge implied trust. It's the same with doctors, right? If they have a white coat on, we listen. If they have bank over the door, we trust them. FTX, right? Sam Bankman-Fried, before the collapse, this guy's now in jail, but a week before the collapse, he's on stage with former presidents. He's sponsoring Formula One cars driven by Lewis Hamilton. All of this marketing, all of this traditional finance world, all of this hoo-ha is designed to distract us from the fact that when, if you bought Bitcoin on FTX, and you left it on in an FTX wallet somewhere in the onboarding when you signed up for FTX, there was a big block of black, you know, tiny little writing and terms and conditions where you signed your rights away, and they owned your Bitcoin, and you had a little IOU, and you trusted in that IOU, and then it turns out that the guy is a criminal and is in jail a month later, right? Like that's traditional finance. It is based on illusions. What Tony's talking about with Bitcoin is that when you learn self-custody, you can ignore all of that. There is no bank. You don't have to trust anybody because the technology now exists that you can immutably verify ownership of your own wealth. And that is a first in the history of humankind, which is why people like Tony and myself believe that Bitcoin is an idea whose time has come, because the world now is starting slowly to learn these lessons and perils. And so while this might stretch your brain a little bit when we get deeper into this self-custody discussion, it's not for nothing. It's for you to be able to, for the first time in your life as a human being, expend time and energy in the marketplace, get paid in maybe fiat currency, but immediately convert it to Bitcoin, and then put it into a system where you have safe sovereignty of that wealth, and in a form of money that is never going to be deflated, that is never going to rely on politicians making promises and printing money and putting you further into debt. It will always be one Bitcoin or sats or whatever you own will always be that. And that is profoundly life-changing when you really understand that. So, Tony, we go to these exchanges, we convert our fiat currency, this Ponzi money, into hard-coded packets of information, right? Like that's what it is. How do we store these packets of information ourselves? How do we become our own bank?
Well, essentially, you need to set up the infrastructure for this. And by the infrastructure, just to sum it up, essentially, you need your own wallet. You know, since now you are becoming the head of security, well, you need a place where you can, you know, withdraw these funds and secure them yourself. That is the process of self-custody. But, you know, it's a process. It's not like a light switch. So, and it involves multiple moving parts. And it requires like a knowledge base in technology. And, you know, a lot of cybersecurity comes into play here if you want to really secure it, you know, as intended. This is what we do here. I mean, we've curated this process. We know it inside out and we continuously fine tune it. Most people don't come from this world. That's why the mere concept of doing this petrifies them. So we teach the skills. You need to become familiar with encrypted vaults, air-gapped wallets, Bitcoin nodes, UTXO management, you know, disaster recovery. All of these right now may sound like foreign, alien terms. But again, once they're explained to you, it's like one synergetic movement that happens in about 60 seconds, and it's done. And once you get comfortable with that, you are literally in full control of your funds, irrespective of what's happening on the outside. So it doesn't matter what politicians say. It doesn't matter what governments threaten. It doesn't matter what anybody does. When your Bitcoin is in your custody, there is no force in the universe that can remove it from you. And that is extremely powerful. The only thing that can make you lose those coins is you. If you make a mistake, if you get complacent, you know, if you're just not being responsible, then yes, you become the risk. But that's a very easy thing to overcome. And it becomes like a nothing burger. Once you do it enough times, it's like almost as seamless as having a cup of coffee. Like you don't think twice about it. You just do it. And once you live on that standard and you experience that level of freedom, there is no going back. I haven't set foot in a bank in over 6 years. I don't miss them. I want nothing to do with them. And in fact, in my head right now, when you live long enough, you know, in Bitcoin, you almost forget that fiat exists. You're like, it's almost as relevant as a typewriter or like a candle in a world of electricity and, you know, modern tech.
I find that here in Cyprus, like almost nobody banks. They're all using Revolut and they're using alternative. They don't care about banks. It's really interesting. Like it's a whole different world. And there's more and more Bitcoiners every day. So let's classify like some of these levels of security, because I want to get into some of the nitty gritty. So somebody's gone and they've signed up for Coinbase or one of these platforms. Coinbase, by the way, is I think one of the riskiest places to be for a number of reasons. One is because it's a honeypot, meaning that everybody knows there's lots of money on Coinbase exchange. If you're a hacker and you're looking to take people's money, you know, it's the old saying, if you want to get the money, rob the banks, right? Like, it's where the money is, right? So in the crypto world, the bigger the exchange, the more sexy it is for hackers. And so the people on Coinbase report getting daily multiple calls, phishing emails, people trying to steal their assets because they're on Coinbase's ledger. And just a week or two ago, Coinbase got hacked again and customer details were taken and hackers are then selling those lists to other hackers and all sorts of shenanigans. So what's the first thing that most people do that want to self-custody that's not correct? So they might go and buy a Trezor. And like, how does a Trezor work? And why is that not enough or not a good idea? Like, what are some of the most common forms of taking it off an exchange that if you went onto YouTube and you saw somebody giving you advice, what would they tell you to do? And how does that work? And why isn't that the best?
Okay. That's a very good point you bring up, and I'll address it in the in the simplest way possible. There are a lot of products out there on the market, all right, and that claim to do whatever it is that they claim. When you become or plan to become your own bank, this is not a side project. It's not an afternoon activity. This is serious. Our mindset going into any self-custody is, that Bitcoin already is the world reserve currency. Like, it's already worth billions and billions of dollars. That is the approach we take when we secure it. So we are not flippant about the products that we use or the methodology just to get things done. We are extremely OCD about every aspect of it because we understand that this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to secure generational wealth. And you want to make sure that you are always at the bleeding edge of everything you can do security-wise to minimize the risk of loss. And that can only be done, by someone who comes from that world, either the tech world in depth or cybersecurity in depth, because, that's the world, that's how their brain functions. So there's a lot of details involved in this process that if you don't come from this space, you won't even consider or think of. We do. And so when we recommend products, we're never going to just go here, buy this and that because they have a promo or they have a discount. We don't care about any promo or any discount. This is not the time to be taking shortcuts and looking for a deal when you're protecting your entire net worth, right? You want to be sure that there is, as little risk as possible. So when it comes to hardware and software, for example, we only focus on open source or verifiable source Bitcoin-only devices that are fully air-gapped, meaning they will never, ever touch a computer no matter what. The seed phrase will be, created offline and secured offline forever, and that's just one aspect of it. Of course, we deploy other advanced configurations to that setup so that the seed phrase isn't like your single point connection to the wallet. So if ever it gets compromised, you wouldn't need to worry that your funds would be stolen. They couldn't be. Same thing pertaining to all of the hardware that you're using. We give strict recommendations as to what you should be looking for in terms of hardware as well. Again, so that you're not taking any unnecessary risks with all of this. And we put it all together. So we guide you into how to configure each and every single element. And at the end of it, you pretty much know you have a bulletproof and airtight setup that you can sleep well at night knowing that your funds are safe and that the risk of loss are as close to zero as you're possibly going to get. The problem in this space is that everybody wants to get into Bitcoin. And so a lot of services offered in the Bitcoin space are offered by individuals that have zero tech background, and that's a big one that I see, especially on services that offer collaborative custody. None of these guys, or most of these guys, have a tech background. Most of them come from TradFi. And so when they start helping clients, their objective is to get them in and out. So we get clients that come to us with a certain setup that is using products like a Ledger or a Trezor or like some of the most horrific recommendations. Where did you get this from? Well, so-and-so told them to me, or they gave them to me for free part of the package. Do you understand? These are the dangers that I see because individuals don't know. So they go somewhere expecting to receive good advice. So on the surface, it seems like good advice, right? But when you compare it to someone that actually does come from the world of tech and cybersecurity, you very quickly realize, like, holy shit, you know, this is I'm living in a straw house versus a bunker for my setup.
Yeah. What I want to do is I want to just, there's a lot of words there, open source, air gap, seed phrase, all this. That for a minute, I just want to move that to the side. For a lot of people, that's just going to be like, oh my God, this sounds very, very complicated. So when you buy Bitcoin, like, let's talk about just the basic premise of like the blockchain, like what happens when you transact on the blockchain and how a wallet and a key, like private and public keys, work together. Like just the very basics of how you explain it to somebody so they understand the very building blocks of this stuff before we talk about the hardware and configurations to make it safe, just so they understand that aspect of it. So when you go and buy Bitcoin on the exchange and you acquire Bitcoin, what actually is going on, and then how does it work from there?
Well, there's 21 million Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody can change that amount. Mm-hmm. So whenever you buy whatever amount it is on the exchange, well, you're, you know, taking a part of that 21 million that is never going to increase. So mm-hmm. that part of it now belongs to you. That asset is fully yours. And so when you hold it in self-custody, it's not available to anybody else, which you continuously add to the whole scarcity of the of Bitcoin. And as more people buy, you know, their Bitcoin and they hold it in self-custody, well, then at some point there's going to be no more left. So when you're buying Bitcoin today, let's say from an exchange, basically what you're doing is that you're buying what's known as the on-chain Bitcoin, the base layer. That is finite. You know, like I said, there's 21 million, realistically less than that, because, you know, maybe 4 or 5 million of them have been lost. So you're actually dealing with an asset that's way less scarce. And so when you're transacting with someone, you're just sending your Bitcoin peer-to-peer from one person to another without any third-party intermediary. It's like if I'm sending you some funds, irrespective of the amount, I can just do it. It's me to you and you to me.
So it's a piece of digital code, like a ledger, that is constantly being updated all Correct. The time. And that ledger, so when you go to a bank, and you deposit money in, that the bank is keeping this ledger saying, all right, it's plus here and minus there, right? This is what's going on. I'm just trying to get to the very basics for people to understand what a bank's role is fundamentally is to keep track of if you send $100,000 here and I want to buy, you know, some services off Tony, I transfer $5,000 over to Tony, then it's a credit on Tony's side and a debit on my side. And their job is to keep track of that. What the Bitcoin ledger does is, it says that wallet has this amount, and if that wallet transfers to that wallet, it gets indelibly put into that ledger, and that ledger is verified by a network of computers globally, which is called the Bitcoin network. It's thousands and thousands of computers that are updating constantly, just tracking who owns this and who owns that on that ledger. Is that a fairly accurate?
Yes, that's spot on, and you can trust this ledger. So, yes. You know, when an amount leaves from one end and goes to the other, and it's actually gone. Whereas in a bank, you know, they can concoct all sorts of creative mathematics around the money that you think you have in that account, which is why it's worth nothing.
And unlike a bank where it's this central point of failure that's keeping the ledger, with the Bitcoin network, there's thousands and thousands of computers all over the world. So when people say, oh, if electricity goes down, well, if electricity goes down globally, everything's screwed anyway. But like electricity could go off in Australia, the whole country. But there's Bitcoin nodes or computers in countries all over the world. So you'd have to lose to every, as long as there's one Bitcoin node still running, keeping That's the ledger, great. Then it's like a virus that will spread back up onto the ledgers, and it's an immutable ledger. So that's what we mean by decentralized. So this decentralized distributed network is keeping track through programmatic hard code that's never been hacked. And there's a huge incentive, some would say, to hack, but then again, there's not, because if you hacked it, you would devalue the value of what you stole straight away, which is kind of part of the magic. But in order for value or an update to this ledger, so that wallet that's owned by Tony, if he wanted to send, you know, $100 to my wallet, he needs the keys to activate that transfer of value to me, correct?
Correct.
Right. So where's the, where do the, so I hope everybody's following this. So all you're doing is, instead of having a bank in the middle, you have no bank, and you have a piece of code that was set in motion in 2009 that has been continually having more and more verifiers or validators coming onto the network to validate the code and these transactions. It's never been hacked. It doesn't rely on a bank. It's globally distributed. It's fair. There's no middlemen. The only people getting paid are the miners to verify the transactions in small fees. But now you've got this international ledger. Nobody controls. Governments can't get their hands on it. Nobody can get their hands on it. And so now it comes down to, okay, well, okay, I grab Tony and I think Tony has all this money, and I put a gun to your head and say, move the Bitcoin, right? How do I stop that happening? If, you know, if you've got keys, how do I stop that? How can I not force it out of you?
Well, I mean, you can't really speculate on the mindset of a of an attacker. So there's no such thing as 100% bulletproof solution. Okay, I mean, there's many ways to mitigate these risks, but from a technical perspective, if you don't give up the keys, right, there's no way on earth that these funds will ever move.
So, and just for the people, what are keys? They're not physical pieces of metal that we stick into a special digital device.
It's a private key that's, you know, generated by your air-gapped wallet, the signing device, that authorizes the sending or withdrawal of the funds from your wallet to another destination, another Bitcoin wallet.
So let's break that down. So you got a wallet that creates a string of numbers that authorizes the transfer of value out of your wallet, and that's called a key.
Correct. This is what people most commonly know as the 12 or 24 words that they need to secure. That is your private key.
Okay.
That's attached to your wallet. So this is why it's imperative that you don't lose these words, or, you know, have them fall into the wrong hands, because if they do, and that's the only thing you have associated to your wallet, then yes, the funds will disappear in 60 seconds.
So if I transfer one Bitcoin from my wallet, I put it in, I have to put in my key to transfer it. It's now in your wallet. It's sitting in the wallet. Nothing can be done with it, moved, whatever, unless you've got the code to move it, the seed phrase, to pass it on to somewhere else.
Yes. When you want to send it to me, you're signing it with your private key, the ones that's generated from your signing device. So it's your 24 words. When I receive it, if I want to send it, then I need to sign it from my own device, which has a whole other set of 24 words. So every individual has a unique set of private keys.
I'm asking these questions as a newbie, right? So the seed phrase, this 12 words or 24 words, how many words is it?
It's 12 or 24.
12 or 24. So you've got 12 or 24 words that you can keep in your head. And we'll talk about steel plates and things in a minute. But let's say you've got these 12 words. Those 12 words give you access to the wallet, correct?
Correct.
And then the wallet generates a string of numbers to authorize the transfer, correct?
Correct. Yes. It signs the transaction.
Signs the transaction.
Yeah.
So the seed phrase gives
authorizes,
you access.
Yeah. It authorizes the transfer because it just validates that, yes, Adam owns this amount of money that he wants to transfer from point A to point B. He can prove that it's his because, you know, he's got the key now to sign that transaction. Mm-hmm. And so that's why without those keys, without those words, if nobody has them, the funds just stay. So in the same way, if you lose those words, the money is technically not lost. It's still on the blockchain. You just have no access to them. You've just locked yourself out of accessing these funds. So this is why, you know, the security aspect of Bitcoin self-custody is important. And that's, you know, that's the part that scares folks, but it really isn't scary at all. It's just, you know, getting used to it. And then once that happens, it's a nothing burger.
So you have your seed phrase to get access to the wallet. And then once you get access to the wallet can give you signing authority to move it on. But without the seed phrase, you're in trouble. So it's super important that you remember the seed phrase. So I'm guessing that the safest way to store a seed phrase is in your head, because then it's not in the physical universe anyway. Is that correct?
Well, some people might argue against that, that that's a bad idea. I'm not a fan of memorizing it either. You know, if you believe in... you know, methods to extract data from your brain. So,
or if you have an accident, if you have an accident, you hit your head and you can't remember. So what do you do? Do you buy a steel plate and you punch it in using one of the steel plates?
Titanium plates are one of many options where you can, you know, mitigate these risks. You know, we have other, you know, ways of sort of creating redundancy, you know, via encrypted channels and what have you, that you can give to folks for safeguarding in case something happens to you. And you can do that, you know, without any worry, because, you know, it wouldn't be the only piece of the puzzle that they would need. Should, you know, if one day somebody decides to become a bad actor, they would hit a dead end. They would still need other components. So there's many ways to mitigate that risk. But at a very basic level, you're absolutely right. You know, you would take these 24 words that are generated offline. That's the key. It needs to be generated offline, and you secure them that way. So I steal our titanium plates. You can have multiple copies of these plates, you know, put them in different jurisdictional you know, places just for your own redundancy. But at a very basic level, that's all you'd need. But from a security perspective, you don't want to rely just on the words, which is why, you know, I mentioned earlier that there are advanced ways to not keep the words as the sole link to your wallet.
Yeah. So I got steel plates, and I just want people to understand what we're talking about here. There are companies that sell these plates, and they come with the little hole punch things and a card that shows you how to, you know, code it in properly. And you basically sit there, and over 20 minutes, you can put those words into a steel plate. They have 12 or 24, you know, lines for the list of words, and they use a simple system to code it in, and they're fireproof, bombproof, basically. And then you store them in locations that you and perhaps through your will or whatever you store, so that access to your wallet is secured that way. But what Tony's saying is there's more to the protocol when you work with the Bitcoin way than just remembering the seed phrase. But the seed phrase is critical because that's what gives you access to the wallet, and then the way to generate the signing code, the authorization, that's the next thing, isn't it? It's like, do you have a wallet that requires just one device to sign, or do you require a wallet that requires several keys to sign? So maybe you could talk like the next part of the transaction.
In which part are you referring to, the signing or the...
The signing. So you know, you've got a wallet and you've got a seed phrase. And so let's just explain the wallet. So where would you get a wallet, like a wallet for people?
A hardware wallet you can buy from very reputable manufacturers. I mean, we recommend, you know, some of the best ones that we test. And like I said, we only focus on open source and verifiable source. So something, you know, companies like Cold Card, for example, Foundation Passport, those are really excellent products when it comes to that type of hardware wallet, because, you know, it's got the secure elements. You can trust it. You know, the code has been verified. There's no funny business going on. And they've got everything that you need to really go the distance in terms of the security level. So we use those.
What happens if those companies go broke? Does it put the wallet that you've purchased off them at risk? Does it render it useless?
No, not at all. And that's the beauty of this whole thing, is that it's product and brand independent. So you can start with brand X today. It can blow up. You can lose it. The company can go out of business. It's not where your money is stored. As long as you've got the moving parts, you know, like your seed phrase, for example, that can be restored on any hardware device in less than 30 minutes. So the hardware...
So it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Hardware is always independent.
I ask this question to point this out to people, that in the Bitcoin world, it's the seed phrase, right? And the hardware, the company that you use to get the hardware could go broke. Trezor could go broke and you're not going to lose your Bitcoin, right? It stops supporting a device.
Correct. And that's especially important for people that, you know, let's say you have to leave in an emergency and you can't take anything with you, or it's been stolen.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry that your money is gone. As long as you have access to the moving parts, you know, like the seed phrase, and no one else other than you has access to that, everything can be restored in under 30 minutes, irrespective of the hardware that you initially started with. That's extremely powerful. And it doesn't really matter where you are, you know, around the globe. Same process, under 30 minutes, you're back in business.
It's very powerful. Like I at this meetup, the somebody brought up about, you know, why is it so important to, why is Bitcoin so exciting to, you know, people who have this situation? In Australia right now, we see, you know, property investors just getting taxed to death because the government's, you know, like in Victoria, the government's going broke. And so they've just like hiking land taxes up, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And the problem with these types of assets, although they've been great long-term assets normally, is that these jurisdictional assets that can't be moved, if you've got a building and the government wants to start taxing you, well, there's nothing you can do. They can double the land tax tomorrow. What are you going to do? Like, you can't move the building. It's there. It's on land owned by the Crown. So, you know, you just sit there like a frog in the water, same as the fiat system, and they just keep turning it up until you're boiled. Whereas with Bitcoin, if you don't like it, you can just walk out of a country literally with nothing in your pocket and a siege phrase in your head and go, like, you know, somewhere that's, you know, where your money's treated better, where your wealth is treated better. You can just go to that place and start living there, and you don't need anybody's permission. It's very powerful. Yeah, if you're afraid.
That's where you realize. Yeah, that's where you realize where you own nothing in this world. Nothing's really yours unless you have an army to protect it. You know, as to go back to your example, you have a building or a piece of land. You know, if people come to you with guns and tell you to get out, like, what are you going to do? You're going to show them a piece of paper with your name and think that's the end of the story. I lived through this. I know this happens when things get bad enough. So now they're doing it with taxes. Wait until things get progressively worse. Then who knows how that plays out? So unless you have an army bigger than the one that's going to, you know, at some point come and visit you, then you have no choice. You have to give in or give it up, which is essentially having it stolen from you. And so Bitcoin redefines these rules. No one can take it away from you, no matter what they say, as long as you don't lose the moving parts, the private keys that connect your funds to your wallet. End of story.
So, guys, we just had a little bit of a tech error. So if this feels like a hard cut here, it's because we lost contact and had to start again. But Tony, I appreciate you going to the real basics here, because what happens is, as you well know, as we're talking today, Bitcoin is knocking on the door of an all-time high again. And just for fun, I'm going to say we're at $107,000 because I know in 10 years we're going to look back and laugh about how the fact we thought $100,000 was a big deal. You know, what happens in a bull market is a lot of people just start buying Bitcoin and they really don't understand it. This is that very first time and they're the most vulnerable. So that's why I really appreciate you going down to the basics. So where we are, guys, just to recap. So you have this thing called the wallet. You can acquire it using a number of different methods. But the access to that wallet is the seed phrase, 12 or 24 words that you can put in your head or you can put onto steel plates. And as long as you have those things, you can, you know, move jurisdiction and move place. And if your wallet blows up or whatever, you still have access, and the wallet simply signs transactions, enables you to move Bitcoin out. It also has an address, Tony, to get Bitcoin in, doesn't it? So that if I want to send value, you can say, here's my public key, send the value there, and it shows up in your wallet. Is that correct?
Well, it's, you send them your Bitcoin address, which is generated from your wallet, and that address is what you send to folks. You can either send it as a string, it's, you know, or as a QR code that someone on the other side can simply scan, which will translate it into that same string, and they can send the funds to it. So it's no different. Like conceptually, it's no different than paying someone, you know, like with a Venmo or PayPal, except it's not using the fiat rails. It's functioning 100% on Bitcoin, peer to peer. So there's no middleman taking a cut of that transaction, you know, other than the minor fee, of course. But beyond that, there's no other third parties taking a cut of that transaction by the time it leaves you and lands wherever you're sending it. So it's straightforward, very simple, takes literally a few seconds in order for it to show up, irrespective of the amount. Again,
it's really interesting. I had an interesting experience here in Cyprus. The first time I'd ever witnessed this, I was at an electronics store buying a Mac computer because my Mac blew up. And fun fact, it's actually quite hard to buy a Mac computer with English keys in Cyprus. It's so funny because I went in and they all had Greek language or Russian language. There was almost no English keyboards on the island. Anyway, I found one and I'm lining up at the shop. And the guy behind me in the checkout line was on a call and he was like, yeah, I'll send you over $2,000. Just send me your wallet address. And he sent $2,000 of Bitcoin while he was waiting in the line to do whatever he was doing. And I'd never seen in public somebody transfer that. He was like 22 years old, 23 years old. And I think he was on, from what I could hear, just on the phone to a colleague in Dubai. And they just transfer value that way, which was so cool. And he said, and moments later, the address arrived and he just punched it in, opened his wallet on the phone, sent out the value and moved on. Crazy.
No, this is crazy. And this just highlights that, you know, Bitcoin is no longer isolated to a bunch of cypherpunks or a limited number of people. There are millions of folks around the world that understand this now. Cyprus is very forward thinking. You know, it's one of my favorite places to come and visit occasionally because people here are starting to get it, especially like the younger crowd. For them, it's like it's like the thing to do now. It's no longer like, oh my gosh, should I not? No, this is what we have to do in order to preserve our money, because Bitcoin is a savings. You know, like a lot of people still think of it as an investment, but it's not. It's a savings technology that appreciates in value. So, I mean, if you want to consider that the investment side of it, fine. But it's your savings. So instead of saving your money in a bank in worthless paper, you actually save it in real money that is money that appreciates in value. And so sending it peer to peer, that's exactly what you saw. And you know, once you start living on a Bitcoin standard, I see this regularly because I mean, I guess you know, I'm surrounded with people that are familiar with Bitcoin. You know, like it's been a while now. So for us, it's.
You travel the world. When I sat down with you,
yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. So, like, I travel regularly to either meet folks, you know, to talk about Bitcoin, to make presentations and what have you. And in that circle, everybody's doing it, you know. So that's why I say, at some point, you live in this space long enough, you forget about the fiat world. You're like already living in the future, and you wonder, like, why is everybody else still not here? Like, why would you deliberately put yourself through hell when the option to live like a free human being is right there? It's like, it's right there waiting for you. Anybody can hop on.
Yeah. So from a security point of view, just for the listeners, when I describe that story in the store, the sender of who's saying, hey, I want this $2,000 from you, he's just sending me a string of numbers, which are fine because that's a sending address, right? So that if that string of numbers falls into the wrong hands, it doesn't matter because it's only to put money into that wallet, correct?
Correct.
It's a deposit string. So he just cut and paste that deposit string, opens his Bitcoin wallet, says send, pastes in that address and hits the amount that he wants to send and then hits send. And then depending on whether he's using the Lightning Network or whether he's using the Bitcoin network. Maybe we could explain that to people. What is the Lightning Network and what's the Bitcoin network and what's the difference? But basically just paste it in and then a few moments later or a few minutes later, that guy's wallet on the other side goes, bing, $2,000 of Bitcoin has just arrived in your wallet and they move on with the day. And there was no bank in the middle.
Correct. Practically, there's no difference. Visually, there is. I mean, on-chain, you're working on the base layer. So it's going to take up to 10 minutes for the transaction to confirm. But the way you send it, whether it's on base layer or Lightning, is exactly the same. It's just that the string looks slightly longer on a Lightning wallet versus a Bitcoin wallet. But you either copy-paste it or you scan the QR code. Or in some cases, you can send someone a picture of your QR code. And their wallet will just, you know, you select it and
it recognizes it
and it sends the fund. So Bitcoin, the on-chain layer, the base layer is, you know, when you go on, you buy your Bitcoin, you're sending it, you know, from person to person. It's going to take up to 10 minutes to confirm. Layer 2 Lightning is what actually is more likely to scale, you know, to 8 billion people. And it's just like a layer over it. And so it's much faster. It's like the fees are much cheaper. And but, you know, practically it's the same. It's the same process. Most people that are in Bitcoin to this day don't really understand the difference. They just know the steps. Okay, I want to send money from here to here. I have to use this wallet, whether it's Lightning or on-chain, it doesn't matter. Send, paste the address, boom, done.
Yes. But what's actually happening and the reason it takes 10 minutes, Tony, maybe you can explain that so people understand why does it take 10 minutes if you use what we call the base layer chain or the actual Bitcoin ledger? Why does it take 10 minutes? What's actually happening there?
Well, when you send your transaction to the blockchain, you have to associate the miner fee. The miners receive your transaction and they have to, you know, confirm your block. That takes time. And to speed it up really depends on how much you allocate to your fees. So on any wallet, there are usually three default settings, slow, medium, and fast. And obviously, if you want to save money, you keep it on the slowest link. But, you know, that'll take potentially a very long time, depending on how busy, you know, the traffic is on the blockchain for your transaction to get confirmed. And you have to have it confirmed at least once to be able to use it. So you might receive some Bitcoin to your wallet, but as long as it's not confirmed, you can't spend it, like you can't use it. So the longer you wait, the longer you can't spend those funds. And that's where the mining fee comes in. So when you're sending funds from point A to point B, generally speaking, I always recommend folks to put it as fast as possible, just so that when the miners receive it, of course, whoever pays the most is incentivized to get confirmed first, and they process the transaction, gets confirmed in a block, boom, those funds are now available to be used by whoever has received it.
So this is the really, I know this for you is like, it's easy, but it's really important for people to understand what's happening here. So a wallet on the Bitcoin network sends a packet of information to the blockchain, and that packet of information is then received, but it has to be acknowledged by a node that's mining Bitcoin and verify that this wallet address that is sending the money actually has that on the ledger, has that credit, right? They actually own this stuff right before you can send it, and that requires a Bitcoin miner to verify that using a computer. And then once it's verified, it is then written into a newly produced block on the blockchain, correct?
Well, no, it goes through a node first for the verification and then goes to the miner for confirmation. So it's two separate processes. But yes, fundamentally, you're right. They check to make sure that the funds, you know, are actually exist, they're yours, you have, you know, all that sort of like compliance stuff on the blockchain is all, you know, taken care of. And then based on the fee that you've set, the miners will, you know, confirm your transaction, and now it's available to use to whoever the recipient is.
Right. And the reason there needs to be a fee, guys, is because Bitcoin is a proof of work network. So there's real energy required by these miners to run these nodes and run these computers. And what Tony's saying is the more that they're prepared to pay, the faster that they will process the transaction. If you decide to say, hey, I'm not in a rush and the other party's not in a rush, they're probably going to put that transaction when there's a lower demand of other, like when the demand on the network is lower, then they'll slide your transaction in at that point. So they basically use technology to prioritize the transactions based on demand. So it's kind of very, very cool how it works.
And it's easily verifiable. I mean, you can easily go to the mempool.space website to see what the fees are at any given time. So when there's like little traffic, the fees will be extremely low. And, you know, when there's a lot of traffic, they'll go up, you know, slightly higher. And so you can sort of decide when you want to send, if you're in a rush or not. But ultimately, there is a fee to pay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for people, just for ballpark, like what are these fees? Let's say you want to send $1,000. What sort of fees roughly would there be?
Pennies.
High speed. pennies.
Yeah, pennies. Right. And it doesn't matter if you're sending 1,000 or 1,000,000. You know, when the fees are low, the fees are low. So it's not like it doesn't really like scale, so to speak, because the number that you're sending is very big. If the fees are low, costs you nothing.
And unlike the banking apparatus, there's no advertising. That, you know, there's no $10 million a year bank salaries that have to be paid. These are just distributed miners all over the world. We don't need to put money in the pockets of all these middlemen and all the rest, right?
Yeah, so basically you're cutting out all the thieves and you're going straight from point A to point B, right? So that's where, yeah, you know, your fees automatically disappear. You don't have to pay them because, you know, there's nobody, you know, taking a bite out of your transaction as it makes its way across wherever you're sending it. So very cheap.
And I interviewed Prince Philip of Serbia a couple of weeks ago, and he said that the turning point for him as a Bitcoiner is that when China blocked Bitcoin mining, imagine that, I think they were doing 40% of the validation and mining out of China at that moment in time, right? It was a huge thing. And then China said, no more Bitcoin mining. Now, imagine in traditional finance, if all of a sudden 40% of the banks got shut in a day, like in one political decision. There'd be like, because of the interconnectivity of TradFi, the whole world would be, finance world would collapse.
Right? You'd have Lebanon on a global scale.
On a global scale. Bitcoin, yeah, no problem. All that happened was the miners moved out. They reallocated. We now see countries like Bhutan mining Bitcoin using their natural resources there. We see countries like El Salvador with their volcano mining that they're going to be selling volcano mining bonds shortly. So basically selling bonds to the public to raise funds to put Bitcoin mines next to their volcanoes and harvest energy to validate transactions for the Bitcoin network. So you can't kill this thing. It's incredible technology that you could shut down something like China and doesn't even blink make any difference.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, really needs to be cemented in people's understanding of Bitcoin, that you cannot stop peer-to-peer technology. You know, like peer-to-peer is almost as, you know, like wind is like the wind blowing. Like, how do you stop it? You just can't.
Yeah.
And so energy will always move to where it's treated best and where it's cheapest. So China banned it. I don't know how many. They didn't just ban it once. They banned it like 3, 4, 5 times. And what happened? Absolutely nothing. It just relocated to different places. And, you know, TikTok, next block, 10 minutes. So this is truly revolutionary.
This is why it takes a minute for people to really understand all the vectors and complexities to it, because it's, I always laugh when people say, you know, you can't touch it. It's got no value. I said, you can't touch the internet. What's the internet worth? Has it got no value? Like, how much economic value has the internet created for the world?
Well, when you use PayPal and Venmo and all these other services, you can't touch those either.
Hmm.
Right? You're just tapping.
So look, Tony, the bottom line, what we've really learned here so far is that the underlying idea is that there's this distributed network. Instead of having the bank keep the plus and minuses, we have this distributed computer network of miners that are verifying and validating transactions, and in so doing are mining new Bitcoin. And we have this wallet, which has a seed phrase, and then the wallet has an address to send into if you want to receive keys, and it signs transactions if you want them to go out. And then that's the basics. But then on top of that is the security protocol, right? There's all these different methodologies of ways to secure the seed phrase and access, particularly the outbound access from a wallet. So first of all, making sure you don't lose access to the wallet entirely. And then secondly, making sure that the way that you validate outbound transactions is the safest. And that's where the Bitcoin way comes in and says, all right, let's go deep on this. Because, and I love what you said, and this is where there's the opinion, right? There's this opinion and that opinion. You got to find the right fit. I just interviewed a guy before you who, you know, is 22 years old when he first bought Bitcoin. He's 30 now. He bought $5,000 of Bitcoin in a brown on paper back in 2015. in a McDonald's car park, and they gave him paper Bitcoin, basically a code. He drove home, put it in his wallet. Today that's worth $750,000. So people listening to this now might think, why do I need to go through all this? Because Bitcoin's a beast of an asset that very likely will 10x from here, in my opinion. So you're saying you've got to get this protocol right. So that's where having a meeting with you guys, and what does your service actually do? Like if I sign up as a customer, like what are you doing with me? Are you doing one-on-one calls with me, and then are you giving me a list of things I need to buy, and then together we do a Zoom call like this and you step me through? Is it a group class? Is it a, what is it? How's it work?
It's absolutely not a group class. All our consults are one-on-one. Everything is personalized, you know, per your needs, requirements, and what have you. But essentially, we walk you through the entire process, starting from the very basics all the way to the end. So our objective here is to make you as comfortable with Bitcoin as we are. And we're extremely good at this and very successful at it. So we break it down into baby steps. You know, this is where we start, starting with, you know, the proper setup, the prerequisites. What's the hardware that you need? You know, what's the software that you need? What's the structure that you need? Is your computer okay? How's that set up? Is that accounted for? All of these little details that genuinely matter, since now you are becoming the head of security. All of these things are important. And so we make sure, first of all, you are aware of what these things are, and we help you lock them down and stay on top of them diligently forever. Like you develop like the eye to spot, you know, what's good, what's bad. And we continuously train folks just to make sure that they don't forget any of this stuff. If there's anything new in the space that comes out, we notify you. We have private signal groups with everyone that we work with one-on-one. So we're in touch with you 24/7. Anything important in the world that you need to know about, that's the first place we will notify you. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach out at any time. That eliminates the need to guess or wonder or, you know, be anxious about anything. If you're not sure, just don't do anything. Drop a quick question in the group. Someone from our team will respond. Happy days. And so we also make it crystal clear that there are no stupid questions during any of these calls. Anything on your mind, you're welcome to ask. Even if you think it's silly, ask it anyhow. We welcome it, because that's the only way you're going to remove these creative demons that you have in your head, potentially about self-custody. And eventually, you know, it'll be like a smooth tide. You'll be sleeping well at night. Yeah, this is no big deal. My money is 100% safe. I know how to use it. No one can take it away from me. Life is good now. And this is when you genuinely start to appreciate the freedom aspect of being in control of your money for the first time ever. So we save you weeks and months, potentially even longer, of do-it-yourself. If you're not the type who's going to watch a video and try to learn it and try to do the trial and error yourself, if you don't want to do this, if you're not comfortable with this, you don't have to. We'll go through all of it in a much quicker, much more efficient way. And the result, you know, with 100% certainty, is going to be bulletproof.
It's all about what you've got there on your name, becoming a sovereign individual.
Correct.
And I think the thing I like about you guys is you charge a fee for your services, but it's a flat fee, right, up front. You don't charge a percentage management of the assets under management or any of that. There's no financial services model. It's just a flat one-time fee.
Absolutely not. We don't believe in the subscription membership model. We also, very important to note, we don't KYC anyone. We're not a financial institution. So one, we don't touch your Bitcoin ever. We don't sign your transactions ever. We don't store any personal or sensitive information about you ever. Fully private, you know, we fully respect that. That's the Bitcoin ethos. That's how we adhere to as well. And our fees, like you mentioned, are one-time fees. We don't charge percentage-based fees based on your net worth. That's absurd. You have to keep most of your funds, right? We make sure that your setup is exactly the way it's supposed to be. And as things evolve, because this is technology and it's not a set it and forget it, we will notify you. We'll continue working with you for as long as you want in order to make sure that all the elements, you know, around this whole process remain state-of-the-art. We cannot become complacent in this space, because it's, you know, it's a one-way street if you lose your funds.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, the way I think about your service is it's like investing in, it's really investing in education. It's like almost getting a degree in Bitcoin security.
Absolutely.
And that's the way to think about it. Like if you were going to go and, you know, I've made money out of commercial real estate, but to learn it, I went and hired people and I went and did courses and I've got the information forever. But you make that investment into your knowledge and then you have it and you can't lose it. And that's what you're paying for. And I think that's really a great way to think about it rather than going, oh, I'm only going to buy $10,000 worth of Bitcoin and I don't know what your services cost, but let's say it's $5,000 or whatever it is. I have no idea. But don't think of it that way. You've got to think about it long-term over securitizing the value of this asset for your family long-term. And that's how I think about it. Is that's
spot on. That is exactly the right mindset for it. It's an investment in you. Show you, we teach you how to unlearn, you know, all the bad habits that we thought were just the way the world works. They're not. It's the way the world works according to a system, you know, designed to rip you off, essentially. And so we wean you off of these bad habits and show you why Bitcoin now redefines the whole game. And once you become familiar with that process, everything just lights up, you know, like life becomes a lot calmer, a lot smoother, a lot cheaper once you live on a Bitcoin standard. All our services, by the way, are 100% in Bitcoin. We have zero, absolutely zero connection to the fiat world. So everything in is in Bitcoin. Everything out is in Bitcoin 100% of the time. And all our services are around the path to self-sovereignty. So we break them down into three stages or three priorities. The first one, of course, is making sure your money's safe. That's the whole prospect of Bitcoin and self-custody. And then we can move on to cybersecurity, where we focus on protecting your online activity, your privacy, protecting essentially the devices that you use to manage the Bitcoin, make sure that's, you know, you're on top of that game. We also go deep into de-Googled privacy phones for people that, you know, want to protect themselves in that way. And then we also have Plan B residency services that if you're not happy where you're living, you think your government's gone completely, you know, off their rockers, you can move into places where they value you as a human being, Bitcoin friendly, freedom friendly. You live on your own terms. We handle all of the logistics. There's nothing for you to do other than show up. And it's a great opportunity. In any case, we meet you in person at all Plan B residency locations and walk you through the entire process. So all the services that the Bitcoin Way offers are one-to-one. It's you're never left to your own devices. You have us on standby 24/7 for whatever it is that you need for as long as you need us. And we will always keep the lines of communication open for anything that you need to know.
Yeah. That's why I love hanging out with you, man. Like I describe myself as a Bitcoiner and a freedom maximalist now. And do you disclose like where you're based or not? I didn't want to dox you before, but you don't disclose the country that you're in.
No. And anyhow, I'm always on the move. So, you know, like when you have a sovereign lifestyle, I make fun of the concept, you know, that own nothing and be happy.
Yeah.
That's very true. I own nothing. Yeah. And, you know, I'm very happy because now I've realized that you don't need much to be happy. So
it's funny, Tony. It is funny because so many people are like, oh, that's such a bad thing. Actually, when you're a Bitcoiner, it's a good thing. So, you know what I mean? Like you can just sort of travel at will. But there's nothing movement, like.
Yeah, there's nothing tying you down anymore. You don't have to worry about, you know, my house, my car, my this, my that. You know, if you want to move, you can live anywhere you want. You know, if you're sick of your apartment, you can just go somewhere else, you know, and you just move from place to place. It really redefines freedom. And like I said, once you get a taste of that lifestyle, it's incredibly empowering and almost impossible to give up because you have the sense of, you know, like this weight has been lifted off your shoulders that you've been carrying your entire life thinking that you have to do this in order to secure your finances and your future and all that stuff. All that is complete false, you know?
Tony, you're preaching to the choir. I did a video on my Instagram the other day where I was just walking along the beachfront here and where I am is probably not as quite as free as where I know you personally, so know where you are. You know, I think you live in perhaps the most free place, one of the most free places in the world. which is beautiful. And we talked about this at the coffee shop, but I did a live on my Instagram where I was expressing this exact thought. Like a year ago, I had all this stuff in my life and I just sold everything. And I've got two suitcases. I now live in a much, much freer country with much, much lower tax on me. And I just feel like a boot that's been on my throat has been lifted. It cost me a lot of money to exit in terms of taxes and selling my assets and paying my tax, my capital gains and all that. But what I feel like, and we spoke about it when we were at the coffee shop, and I was really curious because I've only just really started living the sovereign life. And I was asking you a lot of questions about what it's like. And you said, brother, you will not even know yourself. You will miss none of it. And you are absolutely right. I do not miss my Porsche. I do not miss my house. I don't miss anything. And I feel more alive than ever by just saying, I want to be free. That's what I want. And Bitcoin is freedom. And so I really value people like you that have sort of shone a light on a different path. And I appreciate you, mate. So thank you for coming on and sharing.
It's my pleasure, Adam. I mean, we try to empower people with that knowledge, you know, and to, you know, help them see the light, so to speak. And it doesn't matter, by the way, whether you're single or if you have a family, you know, that weight off your shoulder applies across the board. We deal with people with young kids all the time. And let me tell you, once they move to a less restrictive jurisdiction, they're a completely brand new family. And it's really, really like, it's an incredible feeling, man. It's like, it's hard to put into words, but it really is life-changing.
You don't realize, like, you know, you don't really realize how oppressive it is. Like, I was getting depressed living in a beautiful place. And some people might argue it's because you're greedy or you've got a mental health problem, whatever. But every month I would get up and look at how much taxes I was paying. And it just was a sense of unfairness. It wasn't that I couldn't afford them. It wasn't that anything else, but it was like, I'm one person. I'm a healthy person. I'm probably less likely to be on the healthcare system. My footprint on the public services is less than anyone else. And I'm contributing more than anybody else. And it wasn't until I really said, you know what, I've had enough. And then when I moved, the feeling of this, it's just in every aspect of your life. You just feel, you go the fuel pump, you do this, you do that. You're worried about getting censored. You're worried about, you know, that when you go and buy this thing, it's being taxed to death. And then you just go, the liberation, man. I just for the listeners, I know I put up a post the other day about it. I had 120,000 views of it in 48 hours just talking about this. And there's such an appetite for it. For the listeners, just before we roll tape, I've got a charity event coming up. It's an online event with 100% of the money going to charity. And I've asked Tony whether he'll come on as a guest speaker to specifically talk about sovereignty, not about Bitcoin, but about sovereignty and the options that there are around the world for single people and families to locate to jurisdictions that are honor freedom, you know. And so Tony's going to come in and share some of that knowledge, and I'm sure you'll probably get some clients, because I have honestly referred, I think, 10 families to my immigration lawyer here in 4 weeks. It's just crazy, the appetite for that. And so I hope that you're able to help people find their freedom again, because that is the nature of human spirit.
Absolutely. It's like almost weaning off a bad drug addiction when you're stuck in the fiat system. You know, it's just sucking the life out of you. And, you know, once it's painful, you know, I guess you can call it painful to break free. But once you're off that addiction, it's like, it's almost like you're reborn, you know, and you start viewing life with a completely different lens. You're not stressed. You're smiling. You know, you feel good. Just life just feels like it's just been upgraded significantly once you're in full control of everything. You're no longer tax cattle. Right, because that's what the fiat system essentially turns us into, are just tax cattle. And if anyone just takes 2 minutes to think about it, like, and you calculate how much taxes you pay, if you're paying 50% or more or around there, well, then that means like half the year you are working for free. Like, how does that make sense?
I was just saying, the minute I moved, I got 3 days off a week. because I no longer have to spend those 3 days working for the government.
There you go. There's no hands in your pockets, you know, constantly stealing from you every direction you take. And there's a lot of jurisdictions, by the way, out there now that are embracing that concept of freedom and are not harassing and coming after people to milk them. So don't think you're stuck. No one is stuck. Absolutely not. It's just you have to make that decision. And that's usually the hardest step. But once you do it, everything flows.
I spent a year watching people like Tony. And the more I listen to people like you and that they're out there, and I'm going to these meetups and I'm traveling and I'm going to some pretty weird places, man. I'm loving it. I went to all these cypherpunks and the Honey Badger conference and in the Baltics and all this sort of stuff that I'm booking for. It's just, I feel like I found my people, like I found my tribe, my soul brothers and sisters, you know, that are just on a different.
Absolutely. I mean, this is where you start seeing the beauty in this world, right? When you are in a position to do whatever you want, you just attract what's positive and you just let go of all that other rubbish. You just like disconnect from it. And at some point, like myself, you like it just doesn't exist anymore. You're already living in the future, in the world that you want to be in. And that happens very quickly, much quicker than most people realize. It's just taking the first step. You know, it's like almost like you've never been to the gym. So just the thought of it, like, it's very daunting. But after the first, second, third time, you start looking better, feeling better. And now you're hooked to that lifestyle. Same thing, except this one is exponentially more powerful because now it's your entire life that is free. You're no longer suffocated. It's like you've been living very suffocated and now you can actually breathe. Like it's very hard to put into words, but I mean I'm sure you can understand the message I'm trying to portray. And I hope your viewers also can sort of like connect and resonate with that
message. And it's not all just touchy-feely, because there are some people going, oh, man, this is a bit touchy-feely, but come on, look, just get a compound interest calculator out for all you capitalists out there that want to know the math and just put in, okay, I've got $500,000 tied up in my shit box out in the outer suburbs of nowhere in Australia. If you give up on the idea of home ownership and just let that $500,000 compound at 40% a year for the next 10 years, just do that math and see where you end if you can just give up your addiction to the Australian dream, right? For me, it's the Australian nightmare, but for a lot of people, it's still the Australian dream. It took me, but it's easy to say, having been through it, you know, and we all go through it in different ways. You were forced through it. I went through it a different way, but in the end, you realize stuff just owns you, and you don't own the stuff. The stuff owns you. And
well, the thing is, the red flags are everywhere. If you're living somewhere where things are progressively getting worse, like unfortunately, like Australia, such a beautiful country, but you know, unfortunately, infected with that hell that is, every week there seems to be like some horror story out there. This is a bad sign. This is why I say, like, if you're living in places like this, move. If you have the means or the ability to do so, I strongly urge you to consider leaving, because usually these things end in a very, very ugly way. I know this from experience. And when it breaks, it's going to break instantly. There's no progression to the collapse. I woke up literally overnight and it was done. I didn't have time to prepare. Nobody gave me a warning. Nobody sent me a message. Nobody gave me a letter. I just woke up. I'm like, here, deal with your life being completely blown up and you own nothing anymore.
Oof. If you want to hear that full story, guys, I'll put a link in the description to the first interview with Tony where we go right through that story and I ask him the question, what do you actually do when you wake up the next day and there's literally no money in your bank account? Like, what actually happens next when an entire country that happens to? It's a fascinating story. So, guys, if this is added value, drop a comment, share the pod. And I'll put a link below to reach out to Tony and his team. He's a big figure in the space. He's been on all the biggest podcasts in the Bitcoin world. He sponsors many of them. He's got a lot of clients globally. Very fortunate to have him with us today. And Tony, thank you, mate. And thank you for agreeing to come on with the charity work that we're doing as well. Can't wait to dig into that sovereign side a bit more around living a freer life. And wish you all the best, brother. Can't wait to see
thank
you at
you,
the
Adam.
Next
My pleasure, event. Man. Always happy to help. Whenever you need something, just reach out.
And next time you come back to Cyprus, dude, hit me up in advance so I can come out and win.
Yeah, I'll send you a message. I'll let you know, sure.
All right. Thanks so much.
Talk soon. My pleasure, man. Have a great one.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.